You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Many of us have really fond childhood memories of visiting the zoo. However, over the years, our views on zoos have evolved from a focus on visitor curiosity and entertainment into conservation. Ron Kagan helped to push innovations for both people and animals during his 28 years as head of the Detroit Zoo, the largest in Michigan. Ron recently announced he's going to retire this summer, and he joins us now. Ron, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you.
You've been working with the zoo for nearly 30 years, but your calendar age is still pretty young as far as being in a position of leadership. How did you make the decision to retire?
Well, I decided not to follow in the footsteps of my beloved grandfather, who retired when he was 102. And I thought, I am never going to be able to catch up to that. So,
what did your grandfather do for a living?
Well, he was in England and he owned, with his young brother Max, who was 95 at the time, a textile factory. And they together decided it was time to retire.
For your sake, I'm glad that you're not following the family tradition, but were there concerns that were related to the pandemic or more to your family situation that informed this?
No concerns at all. And I think it's interesting in life. I don't know how often it happens, but that you will actually leave something that you love dearly. So I don't know that there really is a right time. And obviously, I have been thinking about it for a while. The pandemic actually slowed down this process a little bit for me because obviously I did not want to leave the organization when it was struggling through the pandemic. And I'm hopeful that by the summer, we will be in a much better shape just all around.
Will you tell us the story of how you came into your role as the zoo's leader?
Well, I was recruited. I was working at the Dallas Zoo at the time as the general curator. And I really had not thought about Detroit. And at the time, both the city here and also the zoo, I think were on hard times. But when I came up and met with various leaders and got to know the community a little bit, I was intrigued and especially found it very compelling that there was a long tradition of the community really caring about cultural institutions here. And I thought that with that as a foundation, that there was a lot of opportunity to bring this organization forward. And I'm really pleased that I made that decision because I think that my assessment turned out to be right. And I think we've done a lot of really important things here, and it's because we've had so much tremendous support.
There have been a lot of notable changes at the Detroit Zoo during your time. Maybe most notably, the end of the zoo's elephant program, which was a first in the nation move for a cold weather zoo like Detroit's. Will you tell us about that decision?
Sure. You know, I think there may be a misconception that cultural institutions like a zoo or a museum are stagnant, and good ones are not. So all of us are always on a journey. And it sounds trite, but it's a never-ending journey. So the elephant decision in 2004 was not a radical decision for us because we were on a journey and had been for quite a while to really focus on clarity, the clarity that animals who live in zoos should be thriving. And if for some reason they're not, or indeed, if we don't think they can thrive, then they should not be in zoos, in our opinion. So for us, we had done what we do for everything here, which is constantly work on improvements, not just for animals, obviously for visitors too, but improvements for the animals. And in the case of the elephants, a number of times of major expansion of their facility, changes in protocols, many, many changes. And every time we did it, we would feel that while it seemed like a big change in terms of people, it wasn't really a big change in terms of the experience for an elephant. And we finally said, you know, this is really not going to make a significant difference for the elephants. So we had a lot of discussion internally, and then we had discussion with our community, and we explained to them that they didn't see it, but we sure did, that the elephants were not thriving and would not thrive despite everyone's best efforts. And we said, we need to stop doing this. So we did.
Can you give us an example of ways that staff knew that things really hadn't changed for the elephants?
Well, I think we saw the same problems that zoos have seen for many, many decades. You know, whether it's animals developing arthritis, animals developing foot problems, behavioral issues, you know, and it's common sense that if an animal naturally is walking all of the time and it has nowhere to walk, and by nowhere, you know, having an acre or two might sound like a lot to a person, but to an elephant, it's nothing. So aside from the science of all of this, there's a lot of common sense that absolutely needs to be involved in decisions like this. And the common sense reinforced what we were seeing, which is that we didn't see improvements in the animals' behavior or life expectancy or really any other kind of measure that you would look at.
I heard a story that you still keep one of the poles that trainers used to use back in the day to prod elephants. You keep that in your office as a reminder?
Yeah, it's called an ankus.
Yeah.
And it's a rod with a hooked metal tip at the end. And the idea that for so long, we, and I mean that in the broadest sense, not obviously just Detroit, but that zoos basically controlled elephants by chaining them and by physical discipline. It's really appalling when you actually think about this. And we wouldn't dare do this for anything else, nor should we. So I keep that as a reminder. And unfortunately, it's still being used in some places around the country here and certainly abroad.
There have been so many years of American history and civilized history in which we viewed wild animals as something for entertainment value in circuses or smaller zoos. But these days, there's been a sea change that zoos can be about conservation and that bigger enclosures and more humane pastoral settings might be more important than entertainment value. When did you become aware that this shift was happening and that this was going to be a focus of your career, to talk to people about conservation rather than just enjoying the animals?
Well, I think pretty early on in my career, and I think it's important for your listeners to know that there are, you know, a little bit over 200 accredited zoos in the U.S., but there are about 2,000 other places in the U.S. that actually have exotic animals. Now, most of those do not have elephants, but there's a big distinction here. Yes, there are zoos that are really focused on conservation and indeed on animal welfare, and those are the accredited zoos by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, but there are many, many others that don't hold those values. And indeed, it is entirely a commercial venture or simply a very selfish venture that people want to own exotic animals. This is one of the big challenges. We've had to rescue hundreds of exotic animals from all sorts of crazy situations because we don't have enough federal regulation in this country to prevent that. And there are continuing efforts to do new legislation, but it seems ridiculously tough to get them done. I think it was very clear to me towards the very beginning of my career that a lot of changes needed to happen and that we fall into the trap of being selfish. We really want to be around other species, and that's certainly understandable, but the issue is it should not be at their expense. You know, back in the day when I started over 40 years ago, there were lots and lots of situations that just, as I said earlier, in terms of common sense, defied any type of logic. Keeping polar bears in South Texas. Mm-hmm. I mean, how ridiculous. So we've come a long way and there's a long way to go. I'm happy that the science actually has caught up because the science of conservation is robust and has been for a while and continues to get better. The science of animal welfare and the field of animal ethics, those are still relatively new in the world of zoos and aquariums, not in the world of of agriculture in some other places, but that advance is hugely important.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Ron Kagan, longtime head of the Detroit Zoo. Earlier this month, he announced that he's planning to retire this summer.
There are now many biologists and other scientists who do see zoos as having an important role in showing people about animals and in instructing them and helping them understand the threats to habitat. How do you think about our balance between providing a user experience that people enjoy with their families and providing that experience for animals? You talked a little bit about just making sure that the animals are thriving, but what are some of the benchmarks that you and your staff talk about these days?
Well, I think that is really, in a lot of ways, the most important challenge for zoos and aquariums, to face the question you've just posed and to deal with it. And what that means is to really be rigorous, challenging ourselves. So it starts with, well, what species should live wherever you are? And sometimes it's as simple as, well, this is totally the wrong climate for certain animals. Obviously, if we're talking about a frog, it's not that hard to create a tremendous physical environment. And again, I want to reemphasize, it's not just about physical environment, but if it's a very small animal, one should be able to create a reasonable space, an optimal space. But what that does mean is that, you know, we can't be the menagerie that has every type of big cat or every type of primate or every type of parrot. The first and foremost thing has to be quality. And it's not just about quality for the animals. It's indeed about quality for the visitor as well. But we need to stop the trap of thinking that we have to do instant gratification for a visitor, otherwise they won't be happy. And to some extent, we're at fault for that, for shaping those expectations that you won't have to spend more than 30 seconds to find an animal in a particular habitat or exhibit. And if you do have to spend more than 30 seconds, then it's okay to be frustrated and to think, well, there aren't any animals at the zoo. That is an ongoing challenge for zoos, and I think we have to be much more creative about how we are presenting the situation. And we've got to be honest with people that, you know, you can come with us to Africa to see mountain gorillas, and you will spend a lot of money, and you'll spend 2 weeks, and if you're lucky, you'll have 30 or 40 minutes to see the mountain gorillas after you've climbed a mosquito-infested mountain. Or you can spend 15 or 20 minutes here walking around a multi-acre facility until you find the gorillas. To me, this is just us not being as effective as we need to be in preparing people properly for what it can be to have a great experience for us and a great experience for the animals.
Tell us a little bit about the succession plan. And I know that a big part of your year has been dealing with the problems of the pandemic and the accompanying health restrictions and economic recession. At what point are you going to really step away from operations?
Well, the board has a search committee now, and an RFP has gone out to some search firms. So the board will work through that process of internal and external candidates. And I'm here to help, and the board knows that I'm more than happy to help in any way, which also means, you know, not being involved in some things and being involved in others. I will obviously be recommending the board look at certain individuals that I'm familiar with that I think also have done great work. You know, this process normally takes 3 to 6 months. The pandemic does make it a little bit different, but one of the phenomenal things about this organization is the people involved. The staff is amazing and the board is amazing. And I'm sure the board will find somebody who's wonderful and will continue to develop this organization.
What will you miss most about being at the zoo?
Oh, probably everything. So, you know, really, this is such a wonderful place. And it's such a joy to work with all of these really devoted, passionate people who think a lot about what's important. So I'll miss that. And of course, I'll miss a lot of the wonderful things that we've developed here and the programs that we've developed. And obviously the animals. Yesterday I was in with the penguin staff and the penguins, and I sit there and I'm just beaming with joy because, and missing Antarctica too. But
you visited Antarctica, for those who may not know the story.
Yeah, I've been fortunate. I've been to Antarctica 5 or 6 times and many other places in the field. And, you know, I'm sure I will miss everything.
Well, for that matter, what are your plans next? Are you going into full-on retirement, or is there something out there waiting for your attention?
Yeah, I'm not really a golfer and don't have aspirations. So
the lynx of Antarctica are not calling to you.
Yeah, right. I'm sure somebody has played golf in Antarctica. I'm quite positive. But I mean, I think to some extent, I know a little bit about what's ahead. And so I will be helping a wildlife foundation on its board. And I've taught at almost 20 universities around the world so far. And I was asked this week to come to another, to a law school. So I think there will be some more teaching probably, and might help with some documentaries, might do some additional publishing and writing.
You know, as we think about the public's perception of the zoo, we should talk a little bit about where things might be headed in the next couple of decades. But I wonder, first of all, how some of your colleagues, some of the other zoos have come to view what you're doing in Detroit.
Boy, that's tough to answer. I mean, I think some probably feel like we have done something important by moving the discussion forward on things like animal welfare and ethics and sustainability and other important issues. I think for some, we opened some conversations that were awkward, and they may not have appreciated that at the time, but I think you're going to have to ask other people.
Do you see zoos, and maybe also the folks who visit them, as having changed over this time?
Oh, for sure. I think there is far more professionalism. There always have been very, very bright leaders in this profession, legendary people like Bill Conway and George Rapp from Wildlife Conservation Society and from the Brookfield Zoo and many others. But I do think that there is far more science and there's far more sensibility. And the other really wonderful thing that's happened during the years I've worked in this profession is the tremendous influx of women. And just as we've seen that in field conservation and how that has been kind of revolutionary, you know, Jane Goodall being one of the first, but by no means the only, I think that there are so many more women now in key positions in the zoo world, and that has been a tremendous improvement for how people approach things, in my view, far more thoughtfully and with a balance of science and compassion.
So with all that in mind, what do you think should be in the future plan for the Detroit Zoo?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think aware enough of things like ego to know that it would be silly to ask for or expect or even want somebody to continue exactly what I've been doing. I do hope there will be more science. I hope there will be a lot more focus on ethics and animal welfare, not just conservation work. And I think whoever comes here next just needs to advance their view of what is really important. So this zoo has become a sanctuary, and it is an organization that thinks a lot about the individuality of animals, not just what's best for an entire species or population. Hopefully those things will continue, but I really don't know what the next leader will bring in terms of key focus areas.
Ron Kagan, it's really been a pleasure talking to you, and we hope to see you again around the community after your retirement.
Thank you.